This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. Our goal here each night, wherever we happen to be, is to answer your questions.
Hi, my name is Rita, and I'm from the Bay Area.
My name is Howard.
My name is Kirk from Greensboro, North Carolina.
I'm Trish Harris.
And I had a question about the coronavirus.
I've been looking for a job, but I haven't been able to find anything.
I actually lost my job just before this.
My question is...
I don't want this question to be morbid.
What happens to the virus after we flatten the curve?
How do these peaks relate to one another?
When we go back to normal, won't we increase the curve again?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Each night, we have NPR journalists and outside experts here to offer solid facts, to tell you whatever we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that, too. So please keep sending us your questions about all these topics and more at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPR Conversation. And every night, we are beginning the National Conversation by answering the question, what happened today? 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment last week. That means nearly 17 million Americans filed for unemployment in the last 3 weeks.
All of us are affected, but the burdens are falling most heavily on those least able to carry them.
That was Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. The Fed announced they'll pump an additional $2.3 billion into the economy through loans to businesses and states. There have been 16,000 deaths in the U.S. from the virus. In New York, 799 people died yesterday. Governor Andrew Cuomo said the state death toll from COVID-19 is now double the number of lives lost on 9/11.
That is so shocking and painful and breathtaking.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio told NPR they may need 45,000 additional healthcare workers by the end of the month.
You know, our healthcare workers have been through hell. It has been warlike conditions. When you talk to the doctors and nurses who have been through this, they've never seen anything like it.
Dr. Anthony Fauci said while the death toll is up, hospitalizations in New York continue to drop because of social distancing.
That means that what we are doing is working, and therefore we need to continue to do it. I know I sound like a broken record. That's good. I want to sound like a broken record. Let's just keep doing it.
Cases are rising in Michigan. Governor Gretchen Whitmer extended a stay-at-home order for the rest of the month there.
Every single exception to a stay-home, stay-safe order makes this more porous and makes it less likely to work. It means more people are going to get sick, more people are going to die.
On Capitol Hill, Democrats blocked a Republican effort to add $250 billion to the Paycheck Protection Program, saying it was not nearly enough money. In Botswana, the entire parliament was put in quarantine after a possible exposure to the virus. Globally, there are almost 1.6 million confirmed infections and 95,000 deaths. NPR's chief economics correspondent Scott Horsley is here to talk us through those unemployment numbers now and to answer your questions. Bit of a pivot there, but welcome, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Michelle.
So help us put these numbers, excuse me, into perspective, Scott. 6.6 million new unemployment claims this week, close to 17 million in the last 3 weeks. I mean, it's hard for me to even put my head around that. So what does that mean?
It's just another sign, Michelle, of the gut punch we've been dealt by this pandemic. 17 million people who joined the ranks of the unemployed in the last 3 weeks, that represents about one out of every 10 people in the American workforce. So that means we are already looking at a real-time unemployment rate somewhere north of 13%. That's higher than anything we've seen since the 1930s.
And as you would imagine, there are a lot of questions about this, so let's hear them. Let's start with Howard from California, who asks this.
I actually lost my job just before this back in December, and I've been on unemployment since January. I did get hired at another job, but it was suspended because of this. And so I'm still on unemployment. That unemployment runs out in 1 month. I want to know, do I qualify for the extension and also the additional benefit?
I bet he's not the only one. Scott, what do you think?
That's right. The answer is anyone who was on unemployment before or who's become unemployed now is eligible for the extra $600 a week that Congress has authorized that runs through the end of July, and that's on top of whatever you're already receiving in unemployment from your home state. What's more, a lot of people who were not previously eligible for unemployment, people who are self-employed or gig workers and so forth, they're also eligible for those $600 a week payments. And that's a really important lifeline as we try to wait out this pandemic.
And but that whole question of the systems themselves, I know we're getting a lot of questions about that, like how you actually get through. Brianna from Nevada has a question about filing for unemployment.
I'm trying to help my boyfriend fill out an unemployment claim, and he received a green card in the 1980s when there was no expiration date given. And not only do they ask for your alien ID number, which of course he has, but they ask for an expiration date for the card. And everything I put in, 00000000, nothing is going through. And I've, of course, tried to call the unemployment agency, and I just can't get through. And so I'm really hoping you can help me out. Thank you very much.
Scott, I just have to tell you, we've been hearing so much, I'm sure you have too, about how hard it is to get through on the phone. Any ideas?
Yeah, I wish I had something better to tell Brianna, some magic bullet here. This really sounds like a situation where you are going to somehow have to make contact with a live body at the unemployment office, because obviously there's a mismatch between her boyfriend's situation and the way their computer system's set up. The challenge is the systems are overwhelmed right now. You know, with 6.5 million plus people applying last week alone, trying to get through, we know that the phone lines have been jammed. We know that the computer systems have been overtaxed. I talked to a man in New York who lost his job on Friday the 13th of March. And at the time, of course, he felt pretty unlucky, but it turned out he was one of the fortunate ones because he got in just ahead of the big wave of layoffs and was able to qualify for unemployment benefits fairly quickly. His fiance, on the other hand, and some of his coworkers who got their pink slips a week or 10 days later, they're now jostling to get through the system with millions of other people, and they're having to wait longer. The fellow who got through after the Friday the 13th told me, you know, we're all in the same boat, but we're all in different seats on that boat.
Okay, I think we can squeeze in one more. And if you have questions for Scott about the economy, remember you can go to npr.org/nationalconversation or use that hashtag NPR Conversation. You can use the hashtag on social media, of course. I think we have time for one more. And this is from Kirk from Greensboro, North Carolina, who asks what happens to a relief check if a recipient falls a victim to the coronavirus.
I don't want this question to be morbid. I ask it as a matter of financial planning and also a legal matter. What will happen to an eligible recipient's relief check from the federal government if they are in a coma while in ICU or they are deceased due to COVID-19?
Yeah, I put this question to John Wanchek, who's an expert on tax credits at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. He told me that, you know, if a married person dies and had already filed a tax return, the spouse should be eligible to collect that $1,200 payment. If they hadn't filed the tax return, the spouse could do so now and collect. If the person who dies is unmarried, the payment should still come through and it would just be part of their estate. And by the way, this goes for anyone who dies, not just those who die from COVID-19.
Okay, so keep those questions coming. We will answer as many as we can. That's NPR's chief economics correspondent, Scott Horsley. Scott, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we're going to turn now to NPR science correspondent John Hamilton. John, welcome to you.
Good evening.
So at the White House briefing tonight, we heard a lot more about testing. What can you tell us?
The president, you know, he repeated his claim that the U.S. has the best testing in the world. He also said that implementing some sort of mass testing nationwide would be nice, but not really necessary. And that is certainly not what I have been hearing from epidemiologists or virologists or infectious disease experts. What they say is we are only now beginning to test enough people to even know how many people are infected and where they are. So it's true that the U.S. has done more tests than any other country, but we also have more cases than any other country, and we still have tested less than 1% of the population. Both Germany and Italy are ahead of us in that. And we are still mostly testing people who are sick. That means we still don't know how many people are infected but don't have any symptoms.
Hmm. All right. So speaking of testing, let's take a listener question on this subject. Here's Jennifer in Woodstock, Georgia.
My question is, they just opened up a drive-through testing center at the building in front of our neighborhood. Is it still safe for families to walk in the neighborhood being that close to a testing center?
Well, Dig, I guess the answer would be yes. I mean, look, if you're outside and 6 feet from another person, you should be safe even if that other person is infected. And the whole idea of drive-through testing is to minimize the risk of spreading the virus. People stay in their cars. That's a lot safer than having them go into a hospital or a clinic where they might infect somebody else. And they're being tested by healthcare professionals who make sure that only people in full protective gear get anywhere near the person being tested. And one last thing, and that is that, you know, people who are going to a drive-through testing center are doing what they need to do to keep from infecting others. I think I'm really more concerned about people who have symptoms and aren't getting tested.
All right. That is NPR science correspondent John Hamilton. John, thanks for that answer, because I can tell you that we've got a lot of people concerned about this as these testing centers proliferate. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And you can hear much more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. If you have questions, we want to help. Go to npr.org/national conversation or on social media. Use that hashtag NPR conversation. Up next, we've got answers from a top doctor to your questions about flattening the curve.